Namaste and in la ketch. And as I have said before, these are two very important ways to perceive yourself and others. Namaste comes from the Sanskrit language. Spoken means Brahmi, or it's called Brahmi. It means the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. In la ketch comes from the other side of the world, the Mayan culture, and it simply means I am another you. So when you can hold that in yourself and how you see others, then the world suddenly becomes more navigable because you're dealing with you, right? All right, so this week's episode, I'm going to welcome Ipek Williamson, and she is an insight coach. She's a meditation advocate and teacher. She's an author. She's got a podcast called Insights with Ipek Williamson, and it's on Audible. She's a certified insight coach. She's a VP of self-forgiveness. She went through a course at Yale called Science of Well-Being, which I find really interesting. And she's also a graduate, and I hope I don't butcher this, of Bogunski Institute or University. Did I get that right?
It's Boğaziçi, but it's a Turkish word.
Ah, okay. Well, see, my Turkish is rather, I'm bereft. Yes. All right. Well, so grateful to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Zen. It's a pleasure. I love what you do.
Well, thank you. I love what you do too. You know, we've been dancing around on LinkedIn and commenting with each other and sharing posts and things like that, which is really one way to deepen a relationship. And so this is kind of that next level of talking with people that I think are special and have a lot to offer the audience, right? And
thank you. You do.
So in respect of that, one of the things I like to do is just kind of explore, you know, how we began in this world and the kinds of connections that we made from an inner perspective and the recognition of how that awareness comes into each of our individual life paths and the timing and the instances and things like that. So how did it first begin with you? Because I know you have a very deep level of understanding.
Thank you. I had to go through something life-changing. And most of the times, that's how it starts in general. That's what I see with the people I come in contact with. And for me was, the same. I was an executive assistant, and I have been working for more than 20 years. I worked in Turkey as an executive assistant, and then when I moved to Canada, I worked like almost 10 years again as executive assistant. And then I had a very bad experience. I changed jobs and got to another company, which I don't mention anywhere, but it was a big company and it was a nice looking company where I had a very bad, unfortunately, experience. And I ended up leaving in 2.5 months, but it left me with quite a bit of heartache, but it also started a process for me to take time and focus on myself and see and find out who am I? What do I want from life? More importantly, what can I give? And I thought I can go back and look for a job as an executive assistant and continue with that career. By doing that, yes, I will be serving a number of people, but I know that I have in me some way of being a teacher, being a guide, mm-hmm. being an influencer.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to dig a little deeper in that, and, you know, because it seemed like you got set up, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you realize that. So what were the early indicators that you had from an inner perspective that kind of let you know something was about to happen? And I'm guessing it probably happened even before you took the job. Would that be correct?
Yes, that is correct. Actually, a year or so before that, I was visiting Turkey, and one of my high school classmates, she's an astrologist, and she read my map.
Right, the chart.
Chart, yes. And she said, I see that you are changing and you are becoming a teacher. I see you teaching something, being in front of people, touching many people's lives. You are not doing this executive assistant job in a year or so. It's going to change.
Right.
And I didn't think, I didn't know what that could be.
Right.
And in the meantime, though, in 2017, for some reason, I started to meditate. And for the year of 2018, that was my New Year resolution, to meditate every day of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I never stopped. not 1 year, but years later, I'm still meditating. But meditation like opened up my my consciousness, my connection, my creativity, my talents about writing, about anything, like anything I do became better and nicer and more joyful.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, we were talking earlier, and I guess I'll share a little bit of when I had my spiritual awakening at 18, that also kind of drove me into study and meditation and things like that early in my life. And of course, I shared it with my parents, and they thought I was a little wacko, so, or at least they were concerned, and they had me see a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist had said, well, you know, you've got all the classic signs of a spiritual awakening, and had a near-death experience. I'd asked if I was, I'd asked to know truth, and I was willing to die for it if necessary. Well, the experience gave me the understanding there is no death, and we're all cosmic consciousness condensed into form. So understanding that, being able to share that with a psychiatrist at my age, he said, you know, he advised me to keep my mouth shut because nobody's going to understand me, because most people don't go through a spiritual awakening until their mid-40s, if they ever do. And there's multiple reasons for that. You're sharing one of them. Empty nesting is another one, right? But there's this opportunity that takes place, and that you kind of got fed the information initially that, yeah, here it comes, get ready. And then the imposter syndrome shows up. It's like, oh, am I enough? Do I have enough? Well, I have, you know, and then you stepped into it. So how did that take place? What was it like stepping into that new place of understanding and power for you?
Yes. Well, before answering that, I believe that lots of things happen in our lives, and there is some breaking point that we come to make the shift, to make the change. I think that adversity, that event.
Well, the chaos has to get so strong that it's so uncomfortable that we have no choice except to change.
Yes, but there was a buildup over the years. I went through depression, I went through hard times. And at some point, and after spending decades as a depressed and unhappy person who lived for years and years at a low and dark place, I know how that feels, how it tastes, how it looks like, how lonely a place it is.
Sure.
And it took very long time for me to get out of there and find my true self, to heal and connect with my inner child, find my purpose, real purpose in life. But I'm so glad that this whole experiences came my way, so that I am where I am. I am who I am today. And I'm living in a different world now, a world that I have created. And I want everyone who have been in that dark place to get where I am, though I know how long and challenging journey it is if you go through it all by yourself. Right. And I want to hold the hands of as many people as I can and make it easier and much faster for them to get to their true self, their true soul center, their life purpose. I want to see them shining by helping them to find that light switch that has infinite energy in it, that is waiting to be turned on, because I didn't get that help. I had to find it by myself, and that's why it took so long. And now I know how to get through it faster and easier. So that's my life purpose, to help as many people as possible who are going through this kind of stuff to get to the other side mm-hmm. faster and easier and with less heartache.
And especially now with this global challenge that we all have that has added so many layers of that internal challenge as well mm-hmm. in figuring out, you know, who am I? What am I here to do? What's this shift taking place? Is it, you know, relative to a schedule that I'm unaware of, or maybe a fulfillment of prophecy? I mean, you look around, even in your home country, there was a book that came out in the, I want to say, early 90s, maybe late 80s, called The Book of Knowledge. Mm-hmm. And there were 55 or 57 fascicles that were conversation. Are you familiar with that at all?
I've heard of it.
Fascinating, you know, and I read it probably 20, 25 years ago. Don't remember much of it other than it had the common theme of what we're talking about, right? Then we've got the calendars that all align and say, you know, we're in this process of transitioning from one age to another. There's the message that I got at 18 that I'm here to help facilitate a new world order, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense then because it was really overwhelming at 18. Now here we are in a place where we are creating that, and we're noticing this emerging process mm-hmm. that's coming from within, perhaps caused by the obsession on self-hygiene and sequestration. You know, with the things that we've had happen, it gave people an opportunity to look inside and start examining things at a deeper level. And then, you know, and there's many of us that have been there, done that, and are ready to turn and offer a helping hand. Now, in your transition from the job into the new place of your own empowered activity, what was that like? What were some of the things that you went through that perhaps can help the audience understand what their own process might be, and maybe even see where they're at in it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't the easiest process, of course, because there are so many options around you when you want to connect with yourself and get better and become the best coach, best teacher, best influencer that you can be. Mm-hmm. And there are so many options, and you don't know which ones are good resources for you. But I always trust the universe. I always trust my intuition. And I trust the universe that it brings me what I need, what is right for me at the right time. So I choose to surrender, and I choose to turn inwardly and ask for the best people, the best knowledge, the best information to come to me at the right time. And it does.
Absolutely does. It's a perfect choreographed movie almost, right? When you start asking the questions and the things show up and you start noticing it, and you know, what was once called living in spirits now can be termed as living in quantum entanglement with a unified field, because there are these natural patterns, rhythms, cycles, opportunities that come along with those to dive deeper into our own awareness and our ability to integrate our, as you have, skill sets into a greater functional place for others in the world.
Absolutely. Plus, my my motto is, at the age of 49 or something, I decided that from this point on, I will not be doing anything that will not give me joy. Joy is my lighthouse. Joy is what drives everything for me. Meditation is giving me joy and love and beingness.
Right, right.
I love beingness.
Let me ask you a question about that. The beingness, that has a sensation to it, right? So where does that first show up in your body? And I'm going to preface it by what you acknowledge is kind of a twofold process of the universe providing and your intuition backing it up, or at least being in tune enough to recognize what the universe was providing.
That's the key.
Right. So what's that? You know, that's kind of what I understand to be an operation of the first brain, which is the gut, according to indigenous tradition. Second brain is the heart, third brain is the head. And so the processing is an upward motion rather than thinking and pushing it down into the body, which generally causes us to feel dis-ease. And sometimes it manifests rather profoundly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what was that sensation like, and how do you recognize that? This is in order to, you know, as an insight coach, how do you recognize those insights and that sensation so that others might be able to recognize it when it shows up for them? Because the similar feelings, right? We all have them.
Yes.
That's one thing that makes
the problem is most of us are too busy, too overwhelmed with everything going on around us that we don't stay quiet. We don't take a pause.
In meditation, don't we call that the monkey mind? Right.
It is. Unfortunately, it is. And when we take time to slow down, focus on ourselves, close our eyes and our all senses to the outside cacophonia happening around us, then we start to hear the inner voice that has been speaking to us the whole time. That's the problem. I mean, whenever anybody can start doing that, they will find their life purpose. They will find why they are here. They will find what makes them happy. And they will find out about their next steps, their direction, everything, all the information, all the messages we need are already within us, programmed into us, and it's speaking to us like all the time. But we need to slow down and be quiet, be in peace, so that we can start hearing it.
So I would imagine that you probably experienced a lot of synchronicities, and I kind of see that as divine punctuation, if you will, or you know, evidence that you're paying attention.
Yeah. I think I feel like I see them as like angels and guides, like poking.
Sure.
Like poking me. Hey, we're here. Anytime I see something like that, anytime I see repeating numbers or something synchronicity, it's like something very interesting, I always think and smile. Oh, thank you for reminding me that you are here. I'm not alone. Nobody's alone.
Right. Now, do you find that it produces kind of a sense of awe in just that moment?
Yes,
because it's inexplicable, and yet there it is. It's an experience. It's not something you're just thinking about. It's a visceral experience, which is the difference. You know, back even before and as you went through your awakening, you probably read about some things and kind of understood it intellectually, And yet it was still kind of empty because you had no visceral experience of it. And it is experiential. This is the one thing, it's kind of like science, or the scientific method, if you will. You know, it's kind of data-driven. You want repeatability in order to prove your hypothesis. Well, processes are also a part of that, right? It's not just a, you know, an end result that you're looking for. The process is repeatable. It happens in different ways. Yet once you go through certain things and you begin to recognize the patterns that are in place, whether it's in your own experience and your own thinking and how it's reflected and what the universe is providing, mm-hmm. it's a series, if you will, that kind of comes together over and over again. And the more you pay attention to it, the more value and joy you have in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now back to the gut impression. What did that feel like? How did, when you go through those moments, what's the inner sensation or process? Can you describe that a little bit?
My experience is, I feel like something is opening up inside me, like my heart is like bursting with love, so much love for everything, everybody, every being. And that is happening especially during my meditations. While meditating, I feel it to open up. And I know that this is because of regular meditation. Mm-hmm. Through meditation, when we do it regularly, we open up all the chakras that have been clogged over the years. And when we meditate regularly, they start to open up. Energy starts to move easily and freely, mm-hmm. in our body. So
it does that with the chakras, it does it with the meridians, it does mm-hmm. it with the marmas, it is another system within the body. And we have a mutual friend, Melissa Hughes, she talks mm-hmm. about the brain chemistry that changes because of that. So we think differently. And so there are these new neuropathways that are created along with it as well, which replace the old fear-based patterns that usually produce cortisol, which gives you the compressed feeling, the mm-hmm. tightness, as opposed to the expansion you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I so agree about Melissa's approach. It changes the chemistry, it changes the connections of neurons in the brain. And I can tell you this, because of meditation, like meditation helped me to remove the fear from my life. Mm-hmm. Fear is gone. There's no fear anymore about anything.
Most of it is created just because we're programmed to do so from the outer world. And it's been said, written about, most people will agree that anything that you think about that's fear-based usually doesn't happen.
Yes.
Right? It's just Absolutely. Your own perturbations that produce all this unnecessary cortisol and makes you feel diminished. Well, when you lose that and become fearless, your energy level increases, let's go into the vibratory states, right? Frequency increases. Well, when your frequency increases, then, you know, you're more open. It's like when I was mentioning being in the white light earlier and that it had this iridescent, effervescent, high-pitched sensation. When you're aware enough, even in those moments of synchronicity where you're quiet and you're just in awe, you can feel that sensation and it just permeates your entire being.
Yes.
And it's also different than what you've experienced before. And so there's this accompanying, well, what, right? What is that? And how do I repeat it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's giving me so much joy, so much like bliss, joy.
Right.
So I want it to happen again and again and again. And when I feel that joy, I automatically raise my vibrations. And when I raise my vibe, it's like a vicious circle.
Right.
Raising your vibration brings more of that, more of synchronicities, more of positivity.
You like, change your level of harmonics.
Yes. When so
you're attracting.
Like we are, the as I always say, the best thing as human beings, the best thing we can do to make life better is to raise our vibrations.
Now, years ago, you know, there was the whole New Age movement, and even some are still in that, and to the left brainers, this stuff all sounds really kind of woo-woo, right brainish, and things like that. Yet, when the practice, now the science is beginning to prove that. So there's this, I think the functionality of the corpus callosum comes into play. Right, because that's the one that's the, for lack of a better, organ possibly, that or device in the brain that translates everything and provides that balance effect, if you will, in the right and left brain, and then provides this uplifting experience. And so it, in being able to explain this creative sensual side of life, which most of us aren't really familiar with, because we're told to stuff our emotions, we're told to control everything and be this contrived person that shows up at work, in relationships, and acts a specific way because that's how you're supposed to. Right. And I think that's probably how you felt. Would you say that to be true in the jobs that you've held up until your awakening?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have been in corporate settings for years and years. And you know, I don't blame anybody, because everybody working in those settings, they are part of the system, right? They are doing what they can, and they with the information they have.
They're doing what they're able to do based on what they know.
Exactly. They have the good intentions. They are doing a job. But this system, the corporate system, is so limiting. It is limiting, putting people in boxes, asking them to be like each other, like resemblance, like a plant fabrication.
I mean, boxes, literally, you know, the offices are lined with cubicles.
Yes. So it cuts their connection with their creativity, with their intuition, inspiration, with their artistic side. So it's not healthy for a human being, because our consciousness is much more than that.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I had corporate experience myself. I started out in the aerospace industry. In my 20s, I was in charge of $7 million a month in shipments and commercial spare parts for an aerospace company. And when I first was promoted to that desk, of course, it was a new experience for me. I'd been a machinist, went into expediting, and then because of what I was able to do, they promoted me rapidly. Well, I treated people how I'd like to be treated. Hey, how can I help you? You know, is there something I can get for you while I'm off in the plant doing other things that need to be done so that you don't have to waste your time to go get it, right? And so this is how I approached the job. And I excelled. I was top of the performance list in the department. My bosses came to me one day. I had two supervisors, and I thought I was in trouble, right? Because they show up at your cubicle. That's the first thing you think. Like we were talking about earlier, right? And so I'm like, oh, what did I do? And they go, no. It's just the opposite. You're doing so well. We want to know what you do or how you do. And I said, well, it's just interpersonal skills classes. Because in this environment, the majority of our contracts were military. And so it had a military mentality, command and control. If you don't give me what I want, then I'm going to go above you and I'm going to, you know, stab you in the back, or all this aberrant behavior that does nothing but cause ill feelings and fear of, you know, reprisal and all those kinds of things. Well, how can you expect people to do great work when they feel like that?
Absolutely. You cannot. You can't. And it's so easy to make people happy, actually.
It is.
So easy to motivate people. I don't understand why the majority is not choosing to do that.
I may have an answer for that. Maybe it's insightful. Maybe it's just observing, you know, the traditional patterns. This is, we're not, especially in America, possibly the world, the educational systems inhibit our creativity. We're not ever assessed our aptitudes, our attitudes, our skill set early in school. Now, Russia was different, according to what my wife's told me. They're completely different. They start with that and then bring the kids up based on their aptitude and the skill set, right? So those kinds of things, when you've been so programmed through that system and also through belief systems that inhibit your ability to explore the unknown, then that gives this overall cultural, genetic, because genes, you know, these kind of patterns are passed through,
of course,
the genes. And so these are things that we have to deal with, and they come up in our experience, and we're given the choice as to whether to continue to adhere to them or recognize their fallacy and change.
Yes, for example, Ho'oponopono is exactly to work on that. All the data and memories that we have coming from our ancestors through our DNA. Ho'oponopono tries, it's a system, it's a practice to heal beings from that data and memory mass that they already have in them from their coming their generation after generation after generation. So
does that come from the Huna?
It's Hawaii. Hawaii. Yeah,
right.
It's
Hawaii. The shamanism there is it's called the Huna way, I believe, right? So I find that fascinating. I had a woman that was trained in Huna, I guess, and this was 30 years ago. She demonstrated how our auras change whether we're in the past, present, or future. And she did it by using dowsing rods. I'd never experienced this before. And then, of course, I was naive and wanted to know. I showed up early. So it was just her and I in this 40-foot square room. And she stood in one corner. I stood in the other. And she would walk toward me, clear the rods, walk toward me, and open where I was either in the past or future. And they, in those places, they opened up in the same exact spot, about 6 feet in front of me. Then she put a rock in my hand and had me be with that in the present. She barely got two steps in from the other side of the room. So that's roughly a 54-foot hypotenuse. So maybe 48, 49 feet compared to six. So that's a huge difference with an unconscious behavior, right? I wasn't focusing on totally going into meditation, being in the present. So even with that, it was exponential inside. So imagine what a person could do with focused attention, intention, and interaction, and how large an aura that might be, and how others around them could feel that, because we're 99% space, right?
Of course, energy. It's for example, when I lead meditations, I love seeing many people join, because when you meditate as a group, even if online, if virtual, people attending, they say, I meditate by myself and I meditate with you or with groups. There's a huge difference.
Oh, there is.
Because why? Because we are multiplying. We are collectively raising our energy. So by yourself, you're raising so much, but with others together, wherever in the world you are, doesn't matter. When you do it together at the same time, collectively raise the energy of yourself, of everybody else, and of the planet.
One of the things that's been noted by doing so, there have actually been some studies where crime rates reduce during those periods. So the effect, even at that level, is noticeable. So imagine, you know, how these collective activities might affect this shift that we're going through right now. And essentially, I kind of like to call it seeding the thoughtmosphere, right? Where that information is opened up even more, and the explorers that have gone, you know, that really put their lives online to work through things have been able to offer, you know, the hand back, like we were talking earlier. You know, we can reach out and help others. For years, though, the listening wasn't there. And how do you find that, even, I'd say, that since 2018, that's vastly increased? Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Now, how do you notice that?
What is happening is, I think, in my opinion, people who went through this awakening process like you years ago, for them, it was a little bit more difficult or more hurdles on the way. And it took for some a little bit longer. But now it's getting faster and faster and faster, and it's multiplying. Like, the numbers of people who are opening up their eyes is exponentially growing. So there's a lady I follow, and she channels from guides and angels, and she says, we went through something and we passed the bridge. Now we are going back to take others with us to pass the bridge. We are helping others. So I think that's what's happening. And plus, I believe that the children who are born now around this time, or in a last few years, they are already awakened. They come to this world, to this planet, already awakened. So the numbers are growing so fast.
That they are. And there's also the challenges that we have with the narrative that's taking place in the world right now, and the attempt to make us afraid of each other. And the, you know, I don't, one can only hope that the best of intentions were in mind with the activities that are taking place in the creation of whatever, it's hard for me to call it a vaccine because it's not made like one. And there's also, you know, different elements in it. However, you know, there's vastly different reports of its effectiveness, and it's actually causing diminished immune systems itself, right? So this kind of, you know, it's not only counterintuitive, it just seems like there was a, maybe not an intentional mistake, but just an awkward movement that produced unintended side effects that now we're having to deal with. Just believing that there was the best intention in mind, that there, you know, that setting aside all the conspiratorial stuff, which may be possible, right? Because there has been this element that has wanted control, and that the alpha males at the top of the pyramids competing with each other through the industrial age and even up to now are still wanting to be in control, and the fear of not having it is what's causing a lot of the disruption as well.
Yeah.
Now, how have you, and similar things, this is kind of the same thing that you and I've gone through, and others like us, in dealing with the outer world and looking at, okay, what makes sense? What feels like it makes sense? And what kind of questions have you asked that have helped that sense come forth?
Well, not the questions, but my belief is It doesn't matter what I am, I come across, what that could be, vaccine, that could be this and that, this, that could be COVID, whatever it is. What I believe is I am protected no matter what. It's all in our minds. Like, everything is in our consciousness, in fear. Fear, when we remove fear, whatever I do, whatever happens, I am okay. What is the worst case scenario? It's my time to leave this planet. It's okay. And I do, and I will come back.
Yeah. Wherever.
Yeah. Whenever is right for me. So when you feel like you are protected no matter what, you get the vaccine, you don't get the vaccine, you get the COVID, you don't get the COVID, you get something else, doesn't matter. I am living the life that is meant for me, and I will be living and doing my job, my purpose, performing my purpose until it is time not to.
Now, do you find that, and with yourself and possibly with others, you know, I agree, this understanding of protection, but it's the paradox is that there's fearlessness, which means you're not protected, right? In that sense, right? You're totally vulnerable.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And yet in that, there's this ultimate trust in what is, that everything's all right. And so the disease doesn't even show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Like, when you think that no matter what, I'm protected, I'm safe, then you remove the fear. Then when you are against the vaccine, the reason is you are afraid that vaccine will do something to you. When you get the vaccine, or when you get the COVID or any other disease, you fear that it's gonna harm you. But when
sure about that. The reason being, I don't want to put anything in my body. My body takes fine care of itself by proper nutrition and exercise, and I don't need the other stuff. That's not a fear-based thing. That's an acknowledgement that I'm healthy.
And I'm protected.
Yeah.
I'm safe.
And I have been. the epitome of health. You know, I haven't seen a doctor in 30 years. So there's that, right? Mm-hmm. That's the proof. And over time, you know, it may seem like a real stretch for some to leap into that faith, love, and trust place, like we're talking about. And yet, when you do, there's a whole different kind of experience that you don't know you can have until you let go or surrender or submit, or, you know, a lot of these words have a not necessarily great connotation to them, right? Yeah. Because when you submit to something, it's like, oh, I give up, I'm giving myself up to somebody else's will. No, that's not the case. You're giving yourself up to you.
Yourself.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
And all the dynamics, you know, with even now, and you know, it's funny how there's a couple of things that came out in 2010 that were profound as far as their capacity for changing the world. The first one's the ISO 26000 social responsibility standards, ratified by 92 countries that nobody talks about, but it's this intentional movement towards doing the right things for the community and for the world in the way that you do business, right? And the other thing is the triadic dimensional distinction vortical paradigm that Nepi and Close wrote about, quantum physicists, right? Mm-hmm. In their theory of everything. And they state that consciousness, space, and time is tethered across nine dimensions in our own experience. So they're giving us this nine-dimensional framework that we have as part of our being that most of us don't understand, because we're just dealing with the third. And so there's nine more above that. And I think the 12th is actually the white light, from what I've experienced, and the process that William Swigard came up with in the 1950s, leads a person through those accessing your bodies on those different planes of consciousness, also nine of them. And there's nine solfeggio tones. And so there's these multiple patterns, right, that show up to synergize and offer a new living awareness as a result. Right?
That's so true.
You can see it from so many different views that, oh, okay, because you have one that's like, okay, I have this understanding or this question that of possibility, right? And so then you go out and you start checking for corroboration and looking in other places to see if similar things are showing up.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they do. They absolutely do. And, you know, when it might be difficult to understand or difficult to accept surrendering and being okay with what comes your way, because that's the best for you. And I understand that. I understand that some people, like most people, may not be there, at least yet. But it is where most of us, and hopefully all of us eventually, are going toward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or at least, you know, from all the indications, if you just step back and you start doing a historical observation, if you will, of all the different systems and all the different calendars and all the different belief systems and even science, you know, science wasn't even called science until the 1400s. It was philosophy, right? So there's all this corroborative information, and even just the observation of it gives one at least the knowledge that there is a change happening, and it's being stated in so many different places in so many ways that all of it can't be wrong. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I asked a guest, it's been a few months ago, of the possibility of, is it possible that there is this natural emergent system that's coming from within us, that's connecting with the outer world now, and we're, it's a natural design that we have, at least whether it's cosmic timing or whatever, the trigger's been pulled.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
It's happening.
Yes. But I'm reading, I'm watching, I'm getting so much information, knowledge from all kinds of sources. And the main thing they all say is that the consciousness of human beings is exploding.
Mm-hmm. Now, what growing. Do you think it's leading towards?
Well, it is leading towards everybody finding out the real meaning of life, being human, love. Love is growing. Love is becoming the centerpiece of our lives. And on the other hand, we see so much hate growing too, but
they both have to have that balance, I suppose, because without recognizing one, the other is almost impossible, right? Because there's a shift, there's a choice in the shift. And, you know, from what you're saying, I've heard it said this way numerous times, and let me bounce this off of you and see if it makes sense too, that in essence, it's a path towards harmony among people and planet, where holistic education, which includes the mind, body, spirit, and planet mm-hmm. activity, and that this is kind of working as a synergistic agent, right? Where that whole notion of the whole being, the harmony of self, others, and with nature, right? Mm-hmm. That all these things is what Robert Gilman expressed it as. And so there's this opportunity that we have. How, in the efforts that you make with your clients, what have you noticed in the shift of their activity and the practical application of this, let's call it a greater understanding, for lack of a better?
Well, my clients are coming from all walks of life, and they come with their sometimes personal, sometimes professional challenges. And but the main thing I see is during our works together, they start to get to know themselves better. They start to grow their life, self-love. Mm-hmm. Self-love for themselves. Like, it's the main thing that I see missing in people. The lack of self-love.
Do you find that they're looking for permission to love themselves?
Kind of. Like, it is so so heartbreaking how so many people are looking so down at themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I see someone, when I see them, I talk to them, I see so like a beautiful person, amazing, like loving and worthy of everything. And that person looks at themselves and say, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve this.
Yeah, there's no carry-on baggage with this flight.
Yes. Right? Yes. No, no, we need to drop them off. And that's what I try to grow. I try to ignite in them. You are amazing. You are unique. You are beautiful inside and out. You too. Everybody, Zan. Everybody.
Well, see, so there's another thing that comes up. When this generalized you is used, right? Yeah. There's a difference in how people perceive that. Some take it personally, some, you know, and maybe get a little defensive. And some take, well, in your case, that with all the praise, you know, is like, oh man. What, and yet there's this dance that people have with that inner and outer perception. Mm-hmm. How does that show up and reflect in your clients? And I realize it's general, and you know, you and I both have very sacred space with our clients. We don't tell stories, right?
But yeah, of course,
talk about general activities and reflections.
Well, they start to understand their value, their own worth. And they start to show up differently. In general, I do some assessment at the beginning, and mid work we do again, and at the end we do again. So, and we compare them, and it's mind blowing. It's mind blowing the long way they come in a very short time. And the effects are huge, because what I do as a coach doesn't only create great results for the client, but it also affects their immediate family members. When you coach one person, like when you work with one person, absolutely, when you help empower and enlighten them, you also indirectly help their loved ones who see them blooming, changing, growing, transforming. So you help them to set an example for all their people around them.
Now, go ahead. I'll hold that thought, hopefully.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say, you can say something 100 times to someone and see them not following your suggestion or directions. But when you set an example through your actions, your reactions, your words, your attitude, they will come and meet you where you are. And if not now, maybe tomorrow, maybe next month, but they will. And
Right.
all of a sudden, you will start hearing them. You will start hearing them to say things that you would say. And what an amazing feeling that is. I see that in my family too. Like sometimes I hear my husband saying someone to someone else, something to someone else. And I hear him and I look at him and I think, oh my God, I would say the same thing. So, you know, you, the more you talk about and be an example, the more other people get it from you.
It permeates, right?
Yes.
And I would even say, now going back to the calendars we were talking about, I had a good friend was Jose Arguez, and he brought the Mayan calendar out to the Western world. And one of the things that we had a conversation about, this was back in 1997, was this transition between ages from the Piscean to the Aquarian, and that there's a 50-year window according to the calendar, right? And there's this escalation of awareness and consciousness, the tipping point of which was the solstice of 2012, winter solstice of 2012. So that's great. What happens after that, right? Once you've reached that tipping point, well, what seems to be the case, and I think you just referenced it perfectly in the individual and immediate family reference, is that now that we have this new living awareness, we take it with us everywhere. And it's like, you know, T.R. Eker said one time, what you do anywhere, you do everywhere. So once we have this new living awareness and we're beginning to apply it, and as we continue that application, it permeates relationships, workplaces, communities, and
everywhere.
You can just see the ripple effects happening when you can see it from that place. But most of us are, you know, blinders on and you know, doing the daily doldrums or, you know, travails that we have. And so we don't necessarily raise our heads up long enough to look around and notice that. And that's okay too.
Yes.
It's not really necessary, because as you were saying earlier, you know, it's what's for you. If that isn't for you, then you're probably not going to experience it, but you'll get enough of it, and you will get enough of it that it makes sense, and you'll have an experience.
And that is exactly why I am very optimistic about our world, about the humanity, because we are awakening, we are switching gears, and the ones who draw standard gear cars like me knows when you switch gears for 1 second, the engine slows down between the lower gear and higher gear, and then it gets faster, right? We were at that in between gears period during the pandemic. Especially it was slowing down, waking up, pausing, and connecting with ourselves. And in 2022 and on, I believe that we are getting out of that 1 second of pause within 2 years. And now it is time to get into the fifth gear and to speed up toward our dreams and goals with determination and grit.
I like to call that an Evo leap forward.
Yes.
Right. Because that seems what it is. And you're describing it perfectly. And it's something that is not just happening on an individual level, it's happening collectively and collaboratively with a lot of this virtual activity that's been made available because of COVID, right?
Yeah.
Now people have, you know, they've gone from the face-to-face in the real world, which has been limited exposure to local communities or regions or cities or whatever. And now there's international, global involvement in these networking groups and in these activities of groups of people with skill sets that are coming together to learn how to work together, because they feel compelled to look for others to in order to do something better for the world. And so there are these conversations that are taking place, and it is having results. Where, you know, you and I are having this conversation because
exactly
we met.
I was thinking that,
right? And so, you know, I have to really honor, you know, what Dennis's work is and how he's been able to assemble and attract all of these different authors and thought leaders and emotional creatures that just want to share their experience, right? And, and there's no filters in that.
Yes.
So there's this, what, 26,000 articles, I think they've got on BizCatalyst 360. Yeah. So, you know, if you got
and
the
you
time.
Know, it is It is another example or proof of like that the vibration you give out brings you the people and events and things with the same vibration. So from with COVID, especially from local, we went not only from local to countrywide, we went international. The exponential growth of consciousness can be told with this example too. Consciousness is growing as fast, going from local to global.
And it's one thing to talk about it. You know, years ago, we had a lot of conversations with this. I've led workshops. We've had TV shows and things like that. And now we're seeing the examples of it. And it's no longer just a possibility. It's actually happening. Now, how fast or slow it'll go, you know, we don't know, because we're just coming out of this and learning how to dance better with each other. And hopefully we'll have some, you know, find some great dance tunes to go along with it, right?
Well, I'm pretty positive that in my lifetime, we will see a different world.
I agree. And as I told you that earlier, that the message my marching orders gave was that I was to work with these points of light in order to facilitate a new world order, that it would happen in my lifetime. Well, I understood that new world order to be harmony among people and planet. And this is exactly what you're talking about. As the more you articulate these things, and because it initially you use a lot of words to describe something very simply. Mm-hmm. And then it gets to a point where you can use a few words to describe something simply that's just amazing when you really consider the implication of the words.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, I, again, once again, invite everybody to meditate, because by meditating, you are growing your connection, your capacity, your awakening period. It's like your awakening is growing and getting faster and faster. Mm-hmm. So meditation is an amazing tool to grow and express everything you have.
And so I'd love to learn how to meditate. How do you do that? What do you do? What are the simple steps? I know you've got some and I do too. So what do you recommend?
Well, the thing I suggest anybody who's new to meditating, there are as many meditation styles as number of people in the world. It's a unique thing. So one thing that works for someone might not work for the other. I suggest them to start with just breathing exercises, just breathing. Every day, just focus on your breathing for a few minutes. Every time you remember doing that, like for a few minutes, just take a break. Just focus on your breathing. Try to take deep breaths, and that's it. This is a good starting point. And then from there, if you like guided meditation, try 1 or 2 minutes of guided meditations. They are everywhere. I'm on Insight Timer app. My meditations are there, and I do live meditations there too.
I'll have that link below in the description as well.
That would be great. And when you go to Insight Timer, you can even choose meditations according to how long you want. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes. So start with 1 minute, 2 minute meditations. And when I work with my clients who want to get into meditating, I limit their meditation time at first with 2 minutes. I tell them, you are meditating this week only for 2 minutes per day. And why I do that? Because that grows an interest to meditate even more. When you give them a limit, it makes them feel like, oh, I you gave me 2 minutes, but I want to meditate longer. No, you're not allowed. Just 2 minutes this week. And then next week, when I give them 4 minutes.
That was such a tasty meal. I want more.
Yes. Yes. So 2 to 4, then to 7, and then do as long as you like choose your own length. And plus, in meditation, there's a feeling by many that you have to stop your thoughts. You have to stop and not think anything, because if you think things during your meditation, the meditation doesn't count. It's not a good meditation. There is no such thing, because our minds are programmed to think.
That's right.
Yes. That's its job. You just
let it think for a while. It'll eventually get quiet.
The idea with meditation is that even if 100 thoughts come to your mind during meditation, just acknowledging it. Okay, I'm thinking about this.
Go through.
I'm just letting it go. Yep. I'm going back to my breath. That's all.
Yep.
Even if 100 times do that, go back to breath. That's the exercising. That's the working that muscle of letting go and coming back to yourself. Letting go and coming back to your breath.
Right. It's a fascinating experience. I kind of fell into it again as a teenager back in the 70s. I was one of those that explored psychotropics. Excuse me. And one day it was particularly intense, and I was getting a little out of center.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself just somehow, I'd ended up with my fingertips pressed together. Mm-hmm. And I noticed my heartbeat in them. I could feel my heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed that. And then I noticed my breathing. And then before I knew it, I was like totally at peace. Everything was just fine. So years later, I began practicing that and feeling my heartbeat, my fingertips, and as well as taking the deep breaths. And, you know, when you're feeling your heartbeat, you're out of your mind. You're not thinking, you're feeling. And mm-hmm. so those thoughts don't even come at that point, which is that I found that really helpful. And so that's also something that our audience might try. And don't believe me, test it. Try it for yourself.
Yeah, there are so many kinds of meditations. Find whichever you like and
something. Try. Just do it.
Yeah.
But then again, if you're able to just do what you're doing, you know, there's the whole adage of chop wood, carry water,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you're just so engaged in what you're doing that you're not thinking about something else.
Well, it's
a form of meditation too.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. Meditation is a really amazing tool to grow and express your authentic self. And it has helped me immensely in finding myself and exploring my potential, opening up my abundance, gratitude, confidence, creativity, intuition. And I lead live meditation sessions and share my recorded meditations, as I said, on Insight Timer. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there are more than 19 million meditators subscribed to that app. It is just one app. And there are so many more others. It is giving me so much excitement and happiness.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So that, and congratulations, that's mm-hmm. that does... You know, we don't often necessarily look for accolades or evidence or things like that, but man, when it shows up like that, it really lets us know that, yeah, we're in the right place doing the right stuff.
Yes,
because the outer world is reflecting that back to us. And that's also by design to let you know,
mm-hmm.
right? So this has been a wonderful conversation, and we've gone... a little bit over what I normally do, but that's fine too, right? There's no attachments. It's just a conversation. So mm-hmm. in parting, Is there one particular thing that you might be able to offer to be helpful for folks going through this next period?
Of course. Well, what I would say, and I keep saying this, don't let fear to rule your life. Take the harness of your mind into your own hands and be the master of your mind, not the other way around. Love yourself infinitely. Fill your cup with love and share the overflowing love with others. There will be more than enough for more and more people. You are loved. You are safe. You are never alone. You can do it. Just take the first step and start using your wings. You are not a turkey. You are an eagle. You can and you will fly. And don't wait for anything. Start to live your life as it should be now, this second.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ipek. It was such a wonderful conversation, and I know our audience will love it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It has been a pleasure for me, Zen. Thank you.
Awesome. And namaste and in la catch. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of One World. This is Zen Benefiel. I'm your host, and I will see you next time.